It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Ready to cover some ground today. Ready to have a bit of a wake-up call of reality. And from billboards in Charlotte to anti-Semitism in liberal Christian denominations to the Elena Kagan confirmation hearings to Louis Farrakhan's latest attack on the Jewish people. We've got a lot to talk about today. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. Hey, right for the moment, sit back, enjoy the show. Don't pick up your phones yet because there is a problem with the phone lines. But if you need to communicate with me, if you've got a question to ask or a comment, then by all means, email me at Dr. Brown at askdrbrown.org. Or if you're one of our friends on Facebook, you can always communicate with us there. All right, where to start? Okay, this is an interesting little story. Billboards went up in Charlotte. One Nation Indivisible. This is by a secular society, an anti-God, atheistic organization. And the billboard was sending out a message where in North Carolina, although this is not enforced, it's technically on the laws, on the books, saying that you have to believe in God to run for public office. So some people took exception to the sign, and I want you to hear what happened.
Last week, an organization put up this sign. It includes the words, One Nation Indivisible. And it's meant to omit the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, over the weekend, somebody spray-painted the words under God on the sign. The billboard stands in a controversial spot over the Billy Graham Parkway near Boyer Street. WBTV's Dedrick Russell is live there tonight. So, Dedrick, police have any idea who might have done this?
Well, Paul, all police are saying at this hour is they are still investigating. While they investigate, I can tell you that whoever the vandals are, they went to great lengths to try to climb up there and to get their message across, and it's a message some have no problem with. Reaction today.
Somebody's probably just wanting to voice their own opinion.
This country was founded on Christian belief.
Over.
So the billboard saying indivisible, one nation indivisible, someone adding the words under God to it right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Obviously, a lot of people are pleased that those words were added because you're obviously not going to have a nation that's indivisible without being under God. Others say, hey, you're defacing public property and people have a right to say what they want to say, freedom of speech, which of course is true. You can put up a billboard, nothing illegal about it. And to deface it is a crime, but there is a message, a battle of ideologies. So I wasn't aware of that. Having a leadership team meeting right before the show, it was pointed out to me, and that story was from local WBT News. Okay, I haven't said much about the Elena Kagan hearings for a Supreme Court judge. It's quite consequential. She's a fairly young woman, what, 50-ish? And with the potential of serving on the court for decades. Again, this is a lifetime appointment, the Supreme Court. A group of 850 rabbis said we're not proud of her as a Jew. Being on the court, we don't think she should be. We differ with her strongly. And I guess my big question is there no one more qualified in America? Out of all the judges we have from many different backgrounds, is there no one more qualified? Here are some of the opening comments from Jeff Sessions, Republican Jeff Sessions, where after a polite introduction, he raises some real concerns about Elena Kagan. And what I want to focus on in particular are concerns that have been raised in terms of gay activism and in terms of her stance having to do with partial birth abortion. Let's just listen.
Ms. Kagan certainly has numerous talents and many good qualities, but there are serious concerns about this nomination. Ms. Kagan has less real legal experience of any nominee in at least 50 years. And it's not just that the nominee has not been a judge. She has barely practiced law, and not with the intensity and duration from which I think real legal understanding occurs. Ms. Kagan has never tried a case before a jury. She argued her first appellate case just 9 months ago. While academia certainly has value, there is no substitute, I think, for being in the harness of the law, handling real cases over a period of years.
All right, and he goes on at some length in his opening comments. Look, I'm not an expert on Supreme Court nominees. I am not an expert on exactly what would qualify someone. That's why you have these confirmation hearings. People will only push so far at times. Of course, Judge Robert Bork, the most notorious case of, now called Borked. I mean, someone just, things turned against him. The political tide turned against him, and he was grossly and unfairly treated in his hearings. Many accusations that similar things happened to Clarence Thomas, who, of course, was confirmed. But I just want to raise these issues just for your awareness. Some say it's likely she'll be confirmed without a problem now. That's the latest word that's coming out. I just want you to know, so at the very least, you can be praying more fervently for God's will, for God's purposes. Supreme Court justices, the way things are set up now in America, have tremendous influence and power, even more than I believe was constitutionally intended. So Mass Resistance reports this, and we've got this up on our website, askdrbrown.org. If you click on the line of fire, you'll get all these links. Mass Resistance says this: among the things we've uncovered, as Elena Kagan was the dean of the Harvard Law School, she accelerated and legitimized the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender rights concept in law studies at Harvard Law School and in the larger university community. She encouraged Harvard students to get involved in homosexual activist legal work. She recruited former ACLU lawyer and former ACT UP, which is a gay organization, ACT UP activist William Rubenstein, to teach queer legal theory. A few Americans can comprehend the radical nature of queer academics. Rubenstein's described one of his courses as involving new identities, bisexual, trans, gender, blank, can't even repeat that, and polygamy, sadism, masochism, the sexuality of minors. Look, friends, I'm sorry to read this stuff, but we need to be aware, don't we? Kagan promoted and facilitated the transgender legal agenda during her tenure at Harvard. She engaged in ongoing radical advocacy, opposing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and demanding an end to the ban on homosexuals serving in the military, and on and on. She attended functions of radical homosexual groups at Harvard University, absorbing and apparently agreeing with their goals. She followed the wishes of campus homosexual organizations, within a month meeting with a Harvard gay student group. She was agreeing with their demand to ban military recruiters on campus. Again, that's the most egregious thing she did, because the military had a don't ask, don't tell policy that she banned military recruiters from being on campus at Harvard, and that was overturned, her ability to do that. Radical trans, meaning transgender activism at Harvard. Kagan's active promotion of the GLBT agenda at Harvard likely accelerated the campus environment that was becoming so, quote, tolerant of homosexuality and gender confusion that there was even a campaign during her tenure to make the campus trans-inclusive, meaning, hey, you just use the restroom of your choice. You're a man, you identify as a woman, you want to use the ladies' restroom, go ahead. They attribute some of this activism to Kagan being there. And then WorldNet Daily, a story today from Jill Stanek, who is always focusing on abortion-related issues, in particular to things relating to partial birth abortion. And she says the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology is well-known in pro-life circles to be radically pro-abortion. She goes on with information about this and says, as it turns out, this organization is the grandest of frauds. It has just come to light through the process of U.S. Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan's confirmation hearing that in 1996, ACOG let the Clinton White House, via then Associate Counsel Elena Kagan, write its medical opinion of the partial birth abortion procedure. Documents released from the Clinton Library show ACOG inexplicably submitted its draft unhelpful opinion of partial birth abortion for review to the White House in the face of a ban being proposed in Congress, and then changed it to suit Clinton's pro-abortion agenda. And Jill Stanek puts Elena Kagan right in the middle of this with actual documents where words are added in. In any case, is this the right woman to be there? Well, if she's about to be elected and there's nothing we can do except pray, then let's make sure that we do pray. Pray for God's purposes to be fulfilled. I got some surprising news regarding the bank that I currently use for my personal checking account. Fifth Third Bank, located, I think, 18 affiliates across the country, but based in Cincinnati. I got some surprising news. I'm going to bring a guest on to talk to me and tell you something that happened providentially immediately after getting this news. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, so glad to be with you. I want to change direction for a moment and bring on my guest, Phil Burris, who heads up Citizens for Community Values, Protecting the Family since 1983. This is what they stand for. Citizens for Community Values exist to promote Judeo-Christian moral values and to reduce destructive behaviors contrary to those values through education, active community partnership, and individual empowerment at the local, state, and national levels. Phil, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your schedule to join me.
It's great to talk to you again, Dr. Brown.
Well, thanks, sir. Hey, could you just tell me very briefly some of the things that you've been able to see happen in the greater Cincinnati area?
Well, the history goes back to 1977, the Billy Graham Crusade, and after the Crusade, the pastors continued to meet and said, you know, we have to address some of the problems that's addressing our congregations, and they said one of them was the breakup of marriages as a result of pornography. And back in those days, even in the 60s and 70s, Cincinnati was probably one of the worst cities in the country for strip bars and porn stores, one on every corner because it was home to Larry Flint. And today we have none. We have no strip bars, no porn stores. And from there, incredible, we've grown into a state-based organization associated with Focus on the Family, Family Research Council, and the American Family Association.
Now, do you feel that this is kind of strong-arming Christianity onto people, or do you look at this as a way to serve the community?
Oh, no way do we strong-arm anybody. We are a free speech, First Amendment organization, and what's absent in the public square is the voice of reasonable people who can speak to the issues. All we want are the laws enforced that are already on the books, and you know, we speak out on that, and we educate people about what their rights are and what they can do. Pornography, for example, hardcore pornography, is not protected by the First Amendment, and in fact, in the state of Ohio, it's a felony to sell adult videotapes. Now, they still do, but that's another problem that we have with law enforcement, but you know, that's what we do. We educate people and empower them to make a difference in their own community.
All right. Now, recently you discovered something with regard to Fifth Third Bank and the Cincinnati Gay Pride event.
Yeah, this was very alarming. Back in 93, I got involved in this. They passed what's called a human rights ordinance, and we have collected signatures and changed the city charter that says that you cannot pass any laws based on sexual orientation. And that was upheld by the courts, the federal courts. So, and then I'm 96, I got involved in the marriage issue in Hawaii and been very close to that issue. And I chaired a campaign in Ohio to defend the institution of marriage and change our state constitution there as well. And just recently, they've always been active around the greater Cincinnati area, the homosexual activists. But they did something recently that really bothered me. And June is their usual month. They call it Pride Month or whatever it is, and they have a parade. Well, this time they moved their parade to July 4th, when there's going to be a big celebration downtown Cincinnati. And so there's going to be a lot of unsuspecting parents and children that are going to be exposed to inappropriate behavior. So we called several companies who were sponsors, and one of them was Fifth Third, and they refused to budge. They said they're sponsors, and they're going to continue sponsoring it. And we told them it was inappropriate, and Macy's and U.S. Bank, three of them, are the major sponsors of this event. And we can see this coming all across the country, where if they can't get people to come to their parade in June, then they'll go to wherever you are and you know, push their values on you and me.
So what if someone says, well, look, free speech. What's so bad about this? This just people being people. What's so offensive about it? What would you say?
Well, you know as well as anyone else who understands the homosexual agenda is that they do have a political agenda, and at the end of the road, it's to force acceptance on every man, woman, and child, and if they can't do it through a reasonable debate, then they will pass laws and get friendly legislators and judges to force upon us their behavior. So this is not about just free speech, because if that's what they want to call it, then that's what we're doing. We're exercising our free speech rights. But it's their agenda, and if you don't understand where they're going with this, then you need to educate yourself, because the end of the road is to have forced acceptance of their lifestyle, and if you don't like it, you will be either prosecuted under hate crimes laws, or you will be put out of business, you know, through lawsuits.
For some years now, I've said that those who came out of the closet 40 years ago are now trying to put people like us in the closet. Do you think that's an overstatement?
No, and I'm not going into the closet. I refuse.
Amen.
You know, I spent too much time fighting the cultural wars, and, you know, I stand beside people like you that have passion and understand what's at stake here. And I am 68 years old, and I have yet begun to fight. I spent 25 years addicted to pornography, Dr. Brown. And I know what it's like. I spent 4 years, my wife and I, on the board of Exodus International. I have compassion for these people. I don't hate gays. I'm not homophobic. I'm none of that stuff that they try to label you. I have a lot of compassion. But I know that the majority of people that are struggling with this gender identity disorder, this usually occurred when they were very young or as a child. And none of them want to be in this lifestyle. And I have compassion for them, and we've helped literally hundreds and thousands of people walk away from it. You're not born that way. It's a learned behavior, and they're trying to tell everyone else, you know, why don't you give it a try? And sadly enough, a lot of people are, and they're ending up in a life of misery.
Now, you've dealt with companies in the past, and you've been successful. Why do you think it's incumbent on Christians, or the right thing for Christians to do, to either contact companies or no longer do business with them if they can't in good conscience? What good does this actually do?
Well, my goodness, the one thing that we find in the 27 years that we've been doing this is that the average person does not understand the power of one, and it can make a difference. I called Procter & Gamble to complain about this on June 23rd. Because they were sponsoring it, their logo at least was on the web page, and on June 25th, their logo was gone, and another logo went up that it was the employees of Procter & Gamble, not Procter & Gamble. So they changed their response because of one phone call in a big major corporation like that. So, and all the way down to what we call a Ground Zero campaign is where we started the campaign in Cincinnati many years ago, dealing with pornography. There's 2,800 stores in greater Cincinnati, 2 million people, there's 2,800 stores that sell magazines, and we started by just going into the store and asking them to remove the magazines, and if they didn't, you know, that's their right. They can sell it if they want to, but I also have a right to shop where I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So today, 95% of these stores don't even sell Playboy, and that's how you make a difference.
All right, friends, I hope you are listening. The power of one, if we will each just do what we know is right and be salt and light, we will make a difference. And ultimately, these are further platforms for the gospel. Hey, Phil, God bless you for the example you set these many years and for the work that you do. And we're standing with you. On the other side of the break, I'm going to tell my listeners what they can do with Fifth Third Bank in particular. But thanks for your time, and may God give you strength as you continue the battle.
And thank you for the reasonable voice. God bless your listeners.
God bless. All right, I got to tell you what happened. It was immediately after getting an email on the list, the email list for Phil Burris and some of what he does. Looking about Fifth Third Bank, I thought, I really like that. That's the bank where we personally do our business, not our ministry, but my wife and I personally like the bank service and all this. And it's, this is bothersome. I got to tell you what happened. Shortly after getting this email and asking Phil to be on the air with me. Stay with us. God of light. Thanks so much for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, blessed to be with you. We have been having some issues with our phone lines, so we're not taking calls at the moment. But by all means, send me questions and comments directly at Dr. Brown, Dr. Brown, at askdrbrown.org. We've got some important links for you up at the website, so make sure when you get a break, when you get a moment, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. Some links to some articles that we've read, as well as some material we'll be sharing shortly, and a link to contact Fifth Third Bank. Okay, if you missed the last segment, I just had on Phil Burris from Cincinnati Citizens for Community Values. What amazing work they've done. If you didn't hear about how that city was infested with strip clubs and pornography and how it's been transformed, you need to hear that segment. What an encouraging testimony. There's also a link to his website. You can find out more. But in Cincinnati, the Gay Pride event, the march was moved to July 4th when there are big public celebrations, obviously, and people out with their families, and the Gay Pride event can be right in the midst of that, which I find quite offensive and wrong. People have a right to assemble and do what they do as long as they don't break laws in the process of public lewdness or obscenity or whatever else it is. They can march, they can do what they want, but don't do it at a time when there are family gatherings in public and so on. And then we have a right to speak up against these things whenever they're taking place, if we have an issue. Those are rights we have as Americans. Well, when people sponsor the events, that always becomes a concern. Some years ago, U.S. Airways started sponsoring the local Gay Pride event. I wrote and I said, hey, I'm a preferred flyer. I do this, this, this. We've got a school where people are taking missions trips, often flying U.S. Air, and find this offensive that you are taking a stance on this morally and culturally divisive issue. So they write back and I get some of the diversity office, whatever it was. And well, we stand with all of our employees and we just like to show solidarity with our community. And I said, oh, okay, got it then. Well, I'm sure you have employees who are pro-life. I'm sure you have employees who have other moral stand. So do you stand with them on that? No reply. And of course, back and forth, no reply. Pressed the issues politely, asked if I could sit down face to face. No reply. And then next year they weren't sponsoring anymore. I don't know what caused it. I'm just reporting what happened. Well, I get this email. It's distressing that Fifth Third Bank, based in Cincinnati, and this was corporate headquarters, telling Phil Burris that they are going to sponsor the July 4th Gay Pride March, which, again, especially offensive because it's July 4th and it's right in the midst of other family celebrations and citywide things taking place, and there's going to be now a Gay Pride demonstration of sorts in the midst of it. Fifth Third said, no, we're sponsoring them. So I'm thinking, okay, let me just get God's mind on the right way to approach this, because as a matter of conscience, you can't boycott everything. If you decide to boycott everyone that sponsors gay activism, you can't walk, talk. It's not quite that bad, but you can't use your credit cards, can't use your computers, can't use most airlines, can't use most cars. It just goes on and on. You can't boycott everything. But sometimes just out of conscience, you have to take a stand. Well, I'm thinking about this. And I look across the hallway. It's after my show's over. Across the hallway from me is a missions organization that is part of our larger fire family here. And often there are folks, grads, missionaries, that are sitting in that office talking. I looked and I saw a couple, and I couldn't make out who it was. It didn't seem to be people I recognized. So I just got up out of curiosity just to see who it was. Maybe it's some grads or other folks I haven't seen. And no, it's not the case. Husband, wife, I assumed, sitting there talking to one of our missions people, presumably about missions. And as I look, it's like, that's interesting. That's a Fifth Third Bank tag the guy is wearing. He is a banker, a business banker with Fifth Third Bank. I thought, you got to be kidding me. In the office right across me, moments after setting up, we're going to have Phil Burris on today. So I just went and said, hey, can I talk to you? Can I pull you out of this meeting and talk to you for a minute? And he said, look, there are 18 affiliates, and each affiliate makes their own independent choices, and then there's the corporate office. And he said that they're very careful. They just, even though they may have many church people that are banking there, and they may have people on their boards who go to those churches, if one of the churches asks them to sponsor an event, that they just don't do it. So it's just kind of a universal stance of, we're just banking and we're not sponsoring any things like this. If it's obviously religious, political, whatever, we're not sponsoring it. Whoa! Well, hang on. I understand that. I said to him, hey, we're not asking you to put Bibles in your bank, just a bank. Just we're asking you to stay morally neutral on these things. And lo and behold, corporate office in Cincinnati says they're going to sponsor a gay pride event in the heart of the city on July 4th of all times. So can I ask you this? Every one of you that banks with Fifth Third that's listening to me, would you go to our website, AskDrBrown.org, and there is a link where you can contact Fifth Third Bank. Otherwise, you can just go to 53.com, numbers 53.com, and look for a contact form, and just say that you take exception to them sponsoring the Gay Pride event in Cincinnati on July 4th. And urging them to reconsider. What I'm going to do is contact this banker and ask him if we can get employees or bank presidents locally to contact corporate and take exception to that. So we're going to act on this. I'll also write a letter, and then we'll let you know what kind of response we get. But that's just what we want to do. Look, I'm not trying to strong-arm people into believing in Jesus. I'm not trying to force people to be moral. I am seeking to be a voice of conscience, a voice of reason. I'm seeking to speak truth into confusion. One of the roles of this very broadcast, The Line of Fire, is to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos, in a church in compromise. To me, it's part of us being salt and light in our culture. It's what Martin Luther King spoke of when he said that the church is not the master of the state nor the servant of the state, but the conscience of the state. And we are simply raising issues. We are speaking the truth in love. We are not forcing people to believe or agree. We're simply calling on them to do what's right. Hey, how about this? Remember this story I believe I shared the end of last week about the program to give out condoms to elementary school students at a school in Massachusetts? I mean, I was pretty incensed, under control incensed, sharing it last week, all the more repeating it now. Well, what happened is that the school board, Provincetown, Massachusetts, voted unanimously on June 8th to provide free condoms to all students in the district without parental notification. No one in the audience objected. You gotta be kidding me. What's the school board thinking? What are the people thinking? And just the parents in the audience, I imagine. The school's health advisory committee, relying on respected studies, worried that children were becoming sexually active at every younger ages, and it believed protection was the best policy. The proposal had been on the agenda for weeks and had been discussed in open session on local cable channels. Well, word got out through a Fox station in Boston, and then picked up by Massachusetts Family Institute, which made a statement. And anyway, the school is backing down. Not everything is in concrete yet, but the school is backing down, at least on some level. We're called to speak up and do what's right. We come back. I've got a fascinating editorial to read to you from the Jerusalem Post about moral lapses in the church. You don't want to miss it. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, great to be with you today. We've been covering a lot of ground, so if you missed the show, really encourage you to listen to the podcast or listen online at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. The special resource offer this week on the website would really stir your heart. It's my book, How Saved Are We?, written as God was deeply stirring my heart for radical discipleship years back. And with that book, a series I taught called Giants of the Faith, which is, I think, the most popular series I ever taught in terms of edifying, challenging things, where we look at the lives of different men and women that God used mightily and some who fail, that we learn from great leaders from the past. It'll stir you. It will push you. And the MP3 series comes as a gift with the purchase of How Saved Are We? But you've got to do that only through the website. So that's at AskDrBrown.org. Okay, let me share part of an editorial. It came out in the Jerusalem Post June 23rd. called Moral Lapses in the Church. Churches issue slanted reports on the Middle East conflict. Now, there's nothing new about this, but the report, in other words, that liberal churches are doing this, but the editorial has some great insights. Both the Methodist Church of Britain and the Presbyterian Church USA have issued slanted reports on the ongoing conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. The Presbyterian's 172-page report entitled Breaking Down Walls, apparently referring to the security barrier, will be discussed at that denomination's 219th General Assembly. Divestment is not on the agenda as it was in 2004 when Presbyterians were the first Protestant church to brandish such economic pressure against Israel. In other words, divest anything you do, any business with Israel, pull out money. In 2006, after a bitter struggle, the motion was rescinded. But at July's assembly, Presbyterians will consider putting pressure on the Obama administration to stop U.S. aid to Israel until the Israeli government, quote, ends the expansion of settlements in Palestinian territories, ceases its, quote, occupation of Gaza, and relocates, quote, Israel's separation barrier outside of Palestinian territories. Isn't it wild that in America is talk about enforcing our borders more carefully, and the border from Mexico stopping illegal immigrants from coming in, and what can be done? Israel, part of the nation, has a wall to keep terrorists to keep terrorists out, to keep out people who want to kill them and kill their children and destroy them and blow them up and shoot them and stab them. We talk about better ways to keep our borders closed from illegal immigrants, many of whom are not out to kill anyone. Some might be murderous people, but many of them are simply looking for a better life in America illegally, yes. We agree they should not just be allowed to break the laws and come in, and many of them are drug dealers and other things. All the more do we keep them out. But Israel puts up a wall. Part of its borders to keep out people who want to kill them. And churches are outraged. Although Methodists and Presbyterians, the editorial continues, are the most aggressively anti-Israel among liberal Protestant denominations, all five of the mainline denominations in the U.S., Methodist, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, Evangelical Lutheran, United Church of Christ, have debated and in some cases adopted policies intended to bring direct or indirect economic pressure on Israel to compromise with the Palestinians. These mainline denominations stand in stark contrast to the adamantly pro-Israel position adopted by evangelical Protestant sects. So here's an interesting insight from the editorial. Unlike American evangelical theology, liberal Christian denominations do not believe the Jewish people have a continuing role in God's plan, nor do they see the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel as an inevitable step in the redemption process. So initially, liberal Christian groups supported Zionism because they saw this as a national movement of an oppressed group. Now they've switched and they see, okay, no, Israel is the oppressor. Israel's the oppressor and the Palestinians are the oppressed group. So because they don't have a biblical understanding of what's happening or even a fair and just understanding, they end up on the wrong side of the conflict. Liberal Protestants are particularly susceptible to a left-wing agenda that is anti-globalization, anti-capitalist, though liberal Protestants are among America's most affluent and rabidly anti-Zionist. Goes on to point this out. Are you ready? Their sincere desire to pursue justice might be motivated by faith, but implementation often puts them under the sway of organizations with rabidly anti-Zionist or even anti-American agendas. One study by the Institute on Religion and Democracy found that 37%, listen to this, 37% of the statements made by mainline Protestant churches on human rights abuses between 2000 and 2003 focused on Israel. No other country came in for such frequent criticism, though the U.S. was a close second with 32%. China, North Korea, and Saudi Arabia were not critiqued at all. And the editorial ends basically saying, you know, the liberal denominations are losing membership, and that people will have more respect and commitment to a group that is unambiguous in stating their principles. Who can take seriously liberal Protestant denominations that consistently fail to make moral distinctions that set them apart from progressive secularism? And he hopes, the editorial hopes, that they might even reach the conclusion that the Israelis have the right to defend themselves. I was going to read an article from Arutz Sheva Israel National News on Louis Farrakhan asking deceitful Jews to repair damage to blacks. I'm not going to read that right now, except for this one quote. According to Nation of Islam founder Elijah Muhammad, Almighty God, Allah revealed the black people of America are the real children of Israel, and we are the choice of God, and that unto us he will deliver his promise. Let's really pray for those caught up in this deception. And if you want to read the article, then you can find the link online, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. Okay, one more piece of news I haven't gotten to yet, but it's quite important. On Monday, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4, requiring Christian campus groups on public universities so that they get university funding or have university recognition to accept gay students as members and leaders. It came out of a court case where the University of California's Hastings College of Law barred the Christian Legal Society from recognition and funding because it would not accept members who were engaged in homosexual relationships. You could attend the meeting, but you couldn't be a member any more than, say, if you were a carnivorous, meat-eating, meat-loving practitioner, an advocate, you would not be part of a PETA group. You know, if you were an absolute anti-gun person, you wouldn't be part of a rifle club. Seemed reasonable enough. If you were anti-Muslim, then you wouldn't be part of the Islamic club. There's no big. You could attend meetings, but you couldn't be an official member, or you couldn't be if you're vehemently anti-Democrat, then you wouldn't be part of the Democratic club either as a member or as a leader in particular, because you'd have to espouse to certain beliefs. Well, practicing homosexual couldn't agree with basic moral standards that the Christian group would have. Of course, it seems common sense. Of course, you should be able to ban who you want to ban based on the principles of the group. That's what the group stands for. So if you're an atheist, or if you're a practicing witch, or if you believe in polygamy, or if you are saying fornication is fine or homosexual practice is fine, whatever the variation is, it's not part of the Christian group. No. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that the groups, public universities receiving recognition and funding, are required now to allow practicing homosexuals to be members or leaders. Insane decision. Another distressing decision. Someone asked a question earlier, sent me a note saying, look, this is a lot of depressing news. I feel helpless. What do I do? This is when we remember that we are God's people and we are passing through this world and we are serving the King of all kings who rules and reigns, and we are here as his representatives. The darker it gets, part of me gets encouraged because I know the light's going to shine more clearly. Part of me gets encouraged because finally some sleeping saints will wake up. And it's often the case that only when the bottom falls out do people wake up. It's often the case that only when persecution breaks do Christians realize what it really means to follow Jesus. And we sift through the mass numbers of followers and those who are truly disciples. And my hope is in God, not in the Supreme Court. As much as I care about the decisions and care about who's appointed to be on the court, my hope is in God, the judge of all judges and the king of all kings, and I'm his witness and ambassador and representative here. And if you know him, so are you. So this is when we take courage in the Lord. We recognize what's happening. We get grieved. We are burdened. We go before the Lord. We lay our lives out before him, and then we say, Lord, here I am. Send me, use me. Just like God used Paul, the apostles in ancient Rome and the wickedness of that society, and just as God's using his people and Muslim situations, Hindu situations where their heads are literally being chopped off for the gospel, Jesus is being glorified. Let's stand and let's do what's right. Let's overcome evil with good, hatred with love. Let's make a difference.